Good night, sweetheart. All my prayers are for you. Good night, sweetheart. I'll be watching o'er you. Tears and parting may make us forlorn, but with the dawn, a new day is born. So I'll say, good night, sweetheart. Sleep will banish sorrow. Good night, sweetheart. Till we meet tomorrow, dreams enfold you. In them, dear, I'll hold you. Good night, sweetheart.
Playing us in on this episode, a version of Goodnight Sweetheart as taken from The Very Best of Gary Miller. I can tell you nothing more about it than that, except Gary Miller, as enthusiastic as he is, sounds quite a bit like he's doing some sort of pastiche, but I'm very certain he isn't. There's a definite air of the Mike Flowers pops about that particular arrangement. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Goodnight Sweetcast, the Goodnight Sweetheart podcast. I'm Philip Sharman, and I'm joined by Chris Wallace.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about every episode of 1990s sitcom Goodnight Sweetheart from beginning to end. Well, I say 1990s sitcom, but a lot's happened since the last time we met. For the first time in 17 years, there has been a new episode entitled Many Happy Returns. We can say that it happened, that is all. If you hang around with us for another 60 weeks or so, then we'll talk about Many Happy Returns. What I will say is that it's been a bit of a roller coaster week. The reception that we've had for the podcast has been absolutely phenomenal, and we are incredibly grateful for that. Thank you to everyone that's been in touch with us and all the kind words. We have been in communication, particularly with a group who are trying to turn the one-off special into a full comeback series, and their campaign and petition that they've launched, you can find that at goodnight-sweetheart.net. And they've also got some Goodnight Sweetheart memorabilia, and as I say, a petition that you can sign if you would like there to be more. Bear in mind, the more there are, the longer we have to do this podcast for. So we're mixed about that.
They must be stopped.
We were very trepidatious about the new episodes. Returning to something after it's finished, especially so long after it's finished, is a pretty risky game. But, and I think the whole of the television watching public within the UK seems to agree with us as well, they really hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic return and a very welcome return, and it didn't feel like some sort of horrible vanity project like it might have done. It certainly felt, because of the shift in time, that there was the potential for more.
Yeah, it did lend itself to. The format's strong enough that it could, if it wanted to, carry on forever.
Forever. We're going to do this forever. We're only 3 weeks in, and I already feel like it's taking up my entire life.
It is. This is our life now.
In a good way.
In a good way so far. I haven't killed anyone yet. You've been close to it. You've been close to murder in the last hour.
We had a hell of a time getting the podcast equipment to work this evening, so we've ended up getting started much later than we intended. It's working now.
Bake Off's on, but it's fine.
I'm making you miss Bake Off.
It's fine.
You can catch up.
I can catch up.
It's not the same as experiencing the joy of Mary Berry live, though, is it?
It's not. Let's not dwell on it.
Maybe I could whip up a cake while we're recording here. Would that make you feel better?
I'll be some sort of vegan monstrosity, either.
The one thing that has been very amusing, and there's been just an outpouring of emotion on all social media about how much everybody wants Goodnight Sweetheart to return for another series. The thing that I've found most remarkable about that, if I was Gran and Marks, the collective writing team responsible for Goodnight Sweetheart, I'd be very touched by the love that they're being shown. I'd also be a bit terrified, because there is definitely a sentiment that, yeah, we'll just have another series. It's as simple as that. We just say, now there's another series, and it magically appears, as if there isn't a huge amount of work to be done in writing another 10 episodes.
And they're not young men, let's face it. They're not whippersnappers. The idea that they can just knock up a whole series of and maintain the quality they managed for the special, that's a bit of a tall ask. So I would imagine that they're in two minds at the moment. We've not had any feedback from them about the podcast. If you're listening, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
I'd be a bit cautious of two people from a comedy podcast deciding to do this and think, oh, they're just going to make fun of me. We're only going to do that a little bit. That's not the main theme.
And you're a millennial as well, so everyone expects you to just be dismissive, just offhand, and that to be your default position about everything.
Yeah, I've got to think about Snapchat and all that, haven't I?
Thank you very much for all the followers that we've gathered on Twitter especially, also on the Facebook group. You can find us all there as well. What we would really love from you is contributions for our Garrulery. We can't say Garrulery only once. The reason for that is because the word Garrulery is really fun to say.
It is.
Try it at home. Try it now. Even if you're, you know, on the bus or something, listening to us on your commute, say out loud, preferably at the top of your lungs, the Garrulery.
Garrulery.
You'll enjoy it. I guarantee you'll enjoy
and
it.
And it's free promotion.
Somebody sat next to you on the tube will say, what's the Garrulery? And you will say it is the world's foremost collection of Goodnight Sweetheart fan art. You should submit something. And that's how word of mouth spreads.
Brilliant.
It's slim pickings on the Garrulery so far, but it's still early days.
It is. It's very early days. So far we've only had one contribution.
Do you want to talk us through it?
It's from Jack. Wiki Shuffle Part 3. And he has drawn a beautiful picture of Gary and Nicholas Lintast's famous long face. This is of modern Gary in 2016 from the recent episode. That might only be because that's the only episode Jack's seen. So that's his only point of reference. But he's drawn it and he's wearing a t-shirt that says iPad. And around him he's put lots of speech bubbles, which I think represent what would be going on in Gary's mind.
And what is going through Gary's mind in 2016?
Well, the first one is, what is going on?
Understandable, he's discombobulated.
Then under that, he's put, and he's using the youth speak, lol, I am a bad man.
A level of self-awareness that anybody who'd seen more Goodnight Sweetheart would realise Gary doesn't have.
He's really got the character right here, because the next thing Gary would think in 2016 is, where is my friend Ron?
Correct.
Why is Deborah Meaden here? I think he might mean the wife, Yvonne, but at the same time, general question, why is Deborah Meaden here?
A philosophical question.
Yeah.
Why is Deborah Meaden? It doesn't even need the here.
You have Time Machine.
Not a very in-depth understanding of the machinations of Goodnight Sweetheart, because there is no machine.
But then back to normal Gary thoughts. What is for dinner, lol? Because normally it's kidneys. It's two more. I have two wives. Always got to remember that. That's part of his life. That's the most important thing he's got to remember. He has two wives. Can't forget that one. Although he does often and says the names out loud.
All the time.
So he's done that for us. We'll put that as the first one on the wall.
First contribution to the Garrulery, and we're extremely grateful.
Thanks, Jack.
But you can do better. You can definitely do better.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly in terms of artistic accomplishment. The Garrulery will be available to see at goodnightsweetcast.com. So enough pleasantries. Pleasantries out the way.
Let's get back to some hardcore adultery.
Pretty softcore so far.
Yeah, okay.
It's very softcore so far. Because Gary's struggling to get so much as a sniff of a kiss.
No, he's trying his best, though.
He's putting in the legwork.
He's putting in his research. We open up with him putting in his research.
Absolutely.
£100 worth of research.
£120.
Wow.
And that's in 1993 money as well. Like, so that's worth like £124 now.
Something like that.
Or if you look at it as percentages of a house, that's like half a house in 1993 and 0.0002% of a house today.
Wow. And he only works at bungalows.
So he's doing his World War II research.
Finding out all the bombings that have been going on.
Yvonne's not best pleased. Upon being challenged about these books, he very nearly just blurts out, yeah, but I can go back to there. He's not got a good track of his lies.
No. Well, it's because there's a lot of them. And we talked about last week, you've got to be careful with which lie seeds you plant. It's hard work.
And we're only on episode 3. He's not well practiced. He's confused about where he even is. The very first thing he does is hears a plane outside in his Cricklewood home and thinks it might be a Spitfire.
To be fair to him, he has started dabbling in time travel.
I suppose if he was thinking about the larger picture, he might be thinking that the whole fabric of space-time is about to collapse. He doesn't ever express that concern because it doesn't directly relate to his circumstance. No. But I would be thinking that.
He knows where the rules apply to him so far, and that is all he really cares about.
Wider implications be damned.
If I discovered a time tunnel, one of the first things I'd want to do was some experiments. For instance, bring in through an iPhone to see whether it disappears, or whether it turns into one of those old-style phones.
old style phones haven't like evolved into the iPhone in a literal way.
Well, yeah, it's like, did they have? That's pretty much what's happened. I'd also bring through maybe a cat.
A cat?
Yeah, well, because they're...
Didn't you choose like a smaller animal, like a mouse or something first?
Nope.
No, cats. Straight for a cat.
Cats are easier to find.
Maybe it's worth the extra little bit of effort to not kill a cat. That's all I'm saying.
We're not saying I'm killing it.
Yeah, but you might. You'd have to be aware that that was a possibility.
Just poke its paw through.
Then you've got a dismembered cat to deal with. Well, that seems like a hassle.
Well, these are science things that I have to work out. But I'm saying I would do some research.
We know that he can take stuff back and forth.
Clothes, yeah.
He doesn't end up naked every time he travels through, and we're grateful for that.
We are
that
grateful.
That would get really boring really quickly. Brilliant the first couple of times, watching a scrawny Nicholas Lyndhurst run around in the buff trying to cover himself up. You're not going to sustain that for six seasons, though, are you? So he's looking through his books, and he finds out that there's going to be, on this day in history, because fortunately, the date in 1993 and the date in 1940 are the same, and the two timelines progress in parallel to one another. It's quite handy for keeping track of things. I'm not sure how it works with things like leap years.
Don't worry about it.
Whether it throws you out by a day.
It would do.
It would, yeah. Mm. We're going to let it go.
Yeah.
I don't see what choice we've got. He notices that there is going to be an air raid, a big one on the East End. It's going to start early, and he's got an opportunity to let Phoebe know. He's not been back to 1940 since he got punched on the nose.
He's probably thought to himself that this isn't worth it, is it? Although he's saying that, he's got the books.
So he's not leaving it time because it's not worth it. He's leaving it time so that the husband buggers off again.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got every intention of going back, or else why would he have got the books?
I just thought he might think the same way I did. If I got punched in the face, I'd probably not go back.
As we know, Gary Sparrow doesn't think like you do.
No, he does not.
One of the things I found out this week, because we're not Londoners.
Nope, not Londoners.
We're from Northamptonshire, out in the sticks. We don't really understand the geography of London that well. I looked up where Cricklewood is.
Is that real?
Cricklewood's real, yes. It's a real place in sort of northwest London. Fucking miles away from the East End.
Oh, right, okay.
I'd kind of assumed that it was just like a tube stop away. Mm. And that when he was doing this, this was all an achievable thing, that he could just dash back and forth. They're never ever so precise about where they are in Goodnight Sweetheart in 1940, but it is E1, and I think they mention Isle of Dogs. So if you could just do a route plan from Cricklewood to the Isle of Dogs and see how long that would take in Gary's Rumbelows van. Bear in mind there was no congestion charge back there, so driving across London would have been a nightmare.
To Isle of London. Okay. By car, it would take about just under an hour, 57 minutes.
That's not just round the corner. Every time he makes the decision to go to 1940 and cheat on his wife, he's got a 57-minute car journey in which to think about what he's doing.
Yeah, a 57-minute car journey to think about all of the things that could be bad about the decision he's making.
Yeah, to reflect on where he's at and what the best course of action would be. Just could have used that time more efficiently. That's all I'm saying. He needs to make the journey to the East End. He comes up with an ingenious ploy. Can you remember what the ingenious ploy was?
Oh, yeah. He's got to go to Holborn because he's forgotten his circuit tester.
Yeah, his favourite circuit tester.
Everyone's got a favourite circuit tester. And if you leave it there when you've got a big job in the morning, you've got to go back.
Understandable. So off he pops, dashes out.
Yvonne's got to go to the hospital because sister-in-law...
Her sister's had a baby.
And they're going to go to the hospital.
That storyline wasn't really of any consequence, was it?
No.
What it does tell you is that Gary's just become an uncle. From the tone of it, suggests for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't really give a shit. It tells you that much.
He also assumed that she was pregnant straight away, and he did not like that either. He didn't like that at all. So he did learn something from it, because he doesn't want to have babies.
But we didn't come back to it again.
No.
After Duckett's passage we go. Doesn't want to go straight to the Royal Oak, because he's a bit worried Donald is still going to be there.
Coward that he is. He goes to the phone box. Doesn't know how the phone box works, obviously. Got to press different numbers to do different things.
I think I'd have struggled working that phone box as well. Seemed complicated. I've got a feeling that you'd have just had to go through an operator that would have connected you.
That's easier then. Who do you want to speak to? Phoebe.
That does seem easy.
I'll put you right through.
With some assistance from Reg on how to use the telephone, which is all Reg gets to do this week, bless him. If anything, fan favourite Reg, and I think that's certainly from the reaction to the new episode of Goodnight Sweetheart, it is absolutely, definitely safe to say that Reg is an absolute fan favourite. Yeah.
He's a lovable character, and I think that's people love that.
People love lovable.
It's in the name.
That's the thing about lovable things, is that people love them.
Yep.
Good.
I made a good point there.
Top class commentary. This is why people are going to keep coming back to this podcast, even though all we're doing is talking about Goodnight Sweetheart. Mm-hmm. They're going to come back for that level of insightfulness.
Insight, professionalism, critique, historical knowledge.
Not so much.
No, okay, too far.
Not so much. You've pushed your remit a shade too far there. So people love Reg, and I think it's safe to say that Reg has been underutilised so far.
Yeah, all he's really done is pop up when Gary gets stuck and call him a silly sausage or something. You're going to lose your head.
It's already clear that he's obviously a nice guy. It's already clear that he's a bit dim. Mm-hmm. And it's already clear that his misunderstanding is the source of humour. But it's not really, he's not had a chance to shine.
He hasn't really done the best Reggie could be.
He gets through to Phoebe, asks her how she's doing.
Does.
Her response, I don't know whether this is an actual East End thing because I've never heard this before, but I wrote it down. Not so dusty, was her response.
That sounds right. If there's lots of bombs going off, she's not so dusty. She could have been dusty.
I might start saying it myself. How are you doing, not so dusty?
Don't.
Why, I'm too dusty to carry it up.
Yes.
People won't believe me because the amount of dust that follows me around.
That's correct.
Hashtag dust pizza. Having established over the phone that Donald is gone, like a big cowardly coward, he goes to the pub, which is only around the corner. Phoebe's very pleased to see him. Mm-hmm. Eric, not so much so. He's playing dominoes with his mate, the raid patrol warden.
Manny,
that was his name.
Manny was his name.
He was immediately a little bit suspicious about our Gary. Eric's told him as well that he's trying it on with his daughter. Again, a good reason to be a little bit cautious. But he's there with a mission, so I haven't got time for this prattle. He's got one intention, and that is to keep Phoebe safe. Doesn't really give a shit about anybody else in the room, but wants to keep Phoebe safe and is warning her that she needs to go out west and hide from an oncoming air raid that he knows from his secret sources, tap on nose, are going to be coming early tonight, even though they're not expected.
Oh no, Gary. That's what she said. And then she did her other favourite line where Eric came up and said, where'd you get this information from? Because obviously nobody else knows it, including, importantly, the guy whose job it is to know the stuff about the bombs. You can see how panicked Gary was because he didn't even pay attention to anybody else in the room when he just came in and blurted out this knowledge he shouldn't have.
That's not what Gary does when he's panicked. That's just what Gary does.
I tried to think about Gary as a human being when I realised he's not a human being.
You were saying that there's the other line.
It's my favourite line that I've learned that Devla Cohen says. And she says it a lot. She says, oh, Dad! That happens a lot.
Phoebe is convinced and she will listen to her Gary. She will go off to the West End. But she's not going on her own. That gives Gary a bit of a quandary because he's expected home.
Oh, and he's got to let Yvonne know something.
And so he dashes through the portal. Phoebe, you just stay there. I'm going to go and call Yvonne. Oops, just used my wife's name.
The worst one. The worst brain-breaking lie that he could have possibly done. He uses the other woman's name.
Keep it quiet. Internal monologue.
Yeah, he can't do it.
So he's got to go and phone Yvonne. He thinks quick. Yvonne's now his boss. Yeah. Australian for no reason, because why tell a little lie when a big lie will do?
Exactly.
Rushes off through the portal, tells Phoebe to stay where she is. She dutifully obliges. He dashes off through the portal back to 1993, goes to use the phone box. There's a problem.
The phone box is all new.
Well, that wasn't the problem.
What was the problem?
The problem was that the phone box, the first one he went to, and you probably don't even remember this, the phone box only takes phone cards.
Yeah, what does that mean?
What do you mean, what does that mean?
What's a phone card do? I remember a time where there were rows of those grey phone boxes, and there were ones that said phone card, but no one went in them.
No, nobody ever did, even when they were at their height. And 1993 probably would have been peak phone card.
Who carried a phone card? What did it do?
It was light.
Did you get them from bungalows?
They were like a little credit card, and they had phone credit on them. So you'd basically pre-buy your phone time to use in a phone box. parents would always give their kids phone cards because they couldn't then spend that money on sweets. They could only spend it on phoning home to say where they were and what they were up to. Or Yvonne can't get home, I'm having a bit of bother in 1940. That kind of thing. Oh, I mean, my boss is called 1940. Oh, I'm so shit at this. So the first phone box only takes phone cards. Gary doesn't have a phone card. He asks the policeman, PC Dedman Jr., if he has a phone card, because that's what the police are for. Goes to the next phone box, which is a phone box, and it's been vandalised. Can't phone Yvonne.
Rubbish.
Gives up immediately and disappears off back down the portal. He's not had a chance to phone Yvonne, never mind, she'll be alright.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
She won't worry at all. She won't worry.
Why would she worry?
You're just going to be away all night.
Back through the time tunnel and off to the West End to go down a tube for sheltering from the air raid. On the writer's commentary, they said that they did a lot of research about how this whole procedure worked. I, like the writers and like Gary Sparrow, assumed that, yeah, the tube was opened up for people to shelter in. You just turned up. Air raid went off. Everyone goes down the tube. Fine. Have a sing song. Knees up, mother brand. Knees up, mother brand. Knees up, knees up. Knees up, knees up, mother brand. That kind of thing. That's what I thought happens during Glitch.
Jolly.
No, very organised. You needed the tickets.
You needed a separate ticket as well.
Yeah, not just one for travel. You need one to actually go in. Okay. Mini sort of bureaucracy had built up around how this all operated. The set for the Underground was really good.
It was. It's one of the best sets I've seen in Good Night We Out.
For only being used for one scene, quite a throwaway bit, they'd really gone to town on this Underground set. They'd done a really good job. Well done. They haven't got a ticket for the Underground, so they can't stay there, so they're about to get moved on. But who comes to their rescue?
This guy. You're going to have to explain this to me, and I don't get this. This guy is listening into the conversation about the tickets, and he's got a big moustache and a big hat. Jumps down and is very elaborately asks if they needed a ticket. Who needs a ticket?
Maybe over-elaborately. Maybe yes. Overplayed.
A little bit overplayed.
Maybe hammed up to high heaven.
Yes.
But in a quite a likeable way. It's quite fun.
Would you and your wife perhaps require some tickets for this evening? That guy.
Yeah, that's the fella.
And he is called... This sounds like it's a racist thing. What is a spiv?
That's how he's listed, is it? Yeah. Just spiv.
The spiv.
The spiv.
Like he's a superhero.
If you weren't sure what to draw for the Gary Lurie, if you're looking for inspiration, we would very much like a picture of superhero the spiv, just to give you some ideas.
So is he just like a salesman?
Spivs? Think Arthur Daly.
Nope.
Oh, Jesus Christ, you're two damn bloody millennials. Arthur Daly from Minder.
Oh, I know Minder.
Think, I suppose that Del Boy's a bit of a modern day spiv to an extent.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a bit... tradery, wheeler dealery, do you a bit deal, might not be the most legal thing in the world, but it's not.
Oh, okay.
Not the worst either. So
Fanned off the back of a van type.
That's the type. Particularly in the Second World War where everything was rationed, but there were some people that could get their hands on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Including my grandma. My grandma, I had a conversation with her a little while ago about how she was affected by rationing in the war. Didn't affect her one bit. She lived on a farm, was not touched by rationing for the entirety of the war.
Oh, that's good.
Not legal.
No.
I don't think. It's unlikely they're going to come for her now. She's 91 and not in the best health. So if you are listening to this, the police and rubbing your hands together thinking, oh, we'll get that spiv. Don't. That's my grandma. Particularly during wartime, there was lots of potential for the spiv to thrive. And they had a very... they had a look that was very much associated with them. And I would say the character that we saw isn't particularly stereotypical of the cliched spiv character. Mm. He was a bit older than you'd expect a spiv to be. Normally they'd have a really little sort of black moustache and sort of greased black hair and a bit of a sharper suit than you saw him in. The fella in Dad's Army is a more classical cliched spiv whose name escapes me. I do wonder what the etymology is of where the word spiv comes from, so I'm going to have a look. In the United Kingdom, the word spiv is slang for a type of petty criminal who deals in illicit, typically black market goods. The word was particularly used during the Second World War and in the post-war period where many goods were rationed due to shortages. The crucial difference between the spiv and the classic Hollywood gangster was the degree of sympathy the spiv gained as an intermediary in the transfer of black market goods to a grateful mass of consumers. The spiv had a characteristic look which has been described as a duck's class haircut, Clark Gable moustache, a rakish trilby, drape-shaped jacket and a loud garish tie, which all represented a deliberate snook cocked at wartime austerity. The origin of the word is obscure. According to Eric Partridge, the word was originally a racecourse slang, but had become widely accepted by 1950. The Oxford English Dictionary states that it may come from spiffy, meaning smartly dressed, spiff, a bonus for salespeople, especially drapers, but later car salesmen. Spiv was the nickname of Henry Spiv Baxter, a London small-time crook in the 1900s, who was frequently arrested for illegal street trading and confidence tricks. Other suggestions have been made, most commonly noting that spiv is also a Romany word for sparrow.
Hello?
Implying the person is a petty criminal rather than a serious villain. Or that it is an American police acronym for suspicious person, itinerant vagrant. Although this is an unlikely formation, yeah, because it doesn't make any sense. If you enjoy hearing me read out Wikipedia articles, there's another podcast with a lot more of that in it.
Wikishuffle.
Good work, yeah. Okay. Cross-promotion, that's what we're doing here, yep. Cross-promotion. Go and listen to Wikishuffle, where all we do is read out Wikipedia articles.
We do more than that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very exciting, would it?
You press the random article button on Wikipedia and talk about whatever it throws up.
Well practiced.
Thank you.
Upshot of meeting the spiv, have a bunk bed. Have two.
Two bunk beds.
How much?
Don't remember, two oldie monies.
If you want a space in an air raid shelter for you and your not wife,
yeah,
you're going to need 10 bob.
10 bob. All right, okay, 10 bob.
They've got their bunk beds, top bunk. The next bit is an interaction between Gary and Phoebe. And it's kind of lovely. You feel like it's the closest that Gary's got to being honest and revealing something about himself that isn't just a huffy teenager. There's a definite vulnerability there. And you can see that he isn't just trying to get his leg over. There is some genuine affection for Phoebe. There's no doubt about that.
I said to him, I said, Donald, I said, if you can't trust me and I can't trust you, what sort of a marriage is that? I mean, after all, everyone knows about the women out east. And the dirty pictures they sell on the docks. And the... you know. Places men can go.
You mean houses of ill repute?
No. I mean knocking shops.
Well, you know how it is, Phoebe. Soldiers away from their loved ones, you can't...
No. We stood in St. Saviour's and both made vows. What is the point if we don't mean to keep them?
Yeah, take your point.
Otherwise, how's a marriage supposed to survive?
And so did that.
So, then Donald apologised, said that he was wrong not to trust me, and that it was all right for me to see you, just as friends, because he knew we wouldn't do nothing wrong, never.
So, Donald trusts me too, does he?
I told him you were a perfect gentleman, and he believed me.
Hmm.
You are a perfect gentleman, aren't you?
Well, I suppose so, if I have to be.
For the first time, possibly the only time, there's a little glimmer of a penny dropping for Gary Sparrow, yep, as well. Because he hears that news and he thinks, yeah, you've got a point.
Maybe all of this plotting actually having a negative effect on my marriage, yeah, and possibly a negative effect on this woman's marriage.
Doesn't last long, no, because an opportunity presents itself.
She loves chocolate. Luckily for Phoebe, Gary carries a massive bar of fruit and nut in his jacket.
Andy, he spies the opportunity. Can I just say, I'm looking forward to later on in the run of this podcast.
Why is that?
An exercise that I'm going to do. I am going to cut out all of your mock Cockney Phoebe impressions and just run them beside one another.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just do a mashup of you cockneying it up.
Mm-hmm,
I'm fine. Looking forward to it.
I enjoy doing it. I enjoy saying the words to Phoebe.
That much is clear. A big bar of fruit and nut.
Yes.
That's lucky. I'd do anything for some chocolate, she says.
And he says, would you?
Yeah. Oh, you would then. I was thinking about not ruining your marriage, but now...
Whatever are you considering, Gary?
Keep them coming. So out comes the massive bar of fruit and nut. He gives some to Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
She's very grateful. All the young urchins appear. They all want some chocolate as well.
Scurrying out.
Young urchins, old women, pregnant women, all just want some chocolate.
They just smell it. The mixture of the chocolate and the pheromones just get them all. Drowns them all up.
So had they been listening to the whole conversation, does that mean? Because there is pricked up pretty damn quick at the mention of chocolate.
Yeah.
So they must have been listening to all the infidelity.
What else are you going to do?
So everyone gets a bit of chocolate. Oh yeah, Phoebe admits that she's not really in love with Donald as well. That's a theme that's a bit bigger than your average sitcom. Mm. It's a theme that's a bit bigger than this sitcom up until this point. She's admitting that she got married because that's what was expected of her. She was very young, didn't really love him, but there's the obligation. Upon hearing that, it's quite sad news. Mm. Gary's response to recite the lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine.
Yeah.
Just cut through that tension.
This feels like such a lovely moment she's having. How can I reassure her and make her feel better? She's probably just going to recite some John Lennon and claim it as my own. That'll show her up.
But it works.
It does.
As critical as we are of Gary Sparrow's techniques, they bloody well work, don't they? Because she's putty and they very nearly kiss. Bloody the great Alfonso turns up and with his accordion over the top, because one thing that the human male cannot do, physically cannot kiss at the same time as an accordionist is playing.
It's impossible. It's scientifically proven.
The body, the human body just can't do it.
If Gary's pheromones go back inside his neck, it's his weakness. Only if only his wives knew.
Crack out the accordion and they could tame him.
He's coming.
Cut back to 1993.
Oh, yes.
Yvonne, I don't just want to talk about fashion of the 90s.
So they make it difficult, don't they?
I can't let the night show... it wasn't even a night show because she's still got her jeans on.
Her jeans and her stripy socks.
It was some kind of granddad shirt monstrosity that Yvonne's wearing.
It's what she wears when she worries.
She was worried. That's the important thing. It doesn't matter what she was wearing. And it just shows how worried she was that she was prepared to be seen by Ron wearing whatever the hell this thing was.
I know.
So she's worried, understandably, because her husband's only popped out to get a circuit tester.
Circuit tester from Holborn.
Not come back. What's she to do? Rely on Ron for support, apparently, because up he turns.
Yeah, well, I think Stella probably played a part in getting Ron to go on the rounds looking for Gary, make sure he wasn't in a ditch somewhere. But he'd done a little trip round, came back to tell Yvonne, can't find him.
There's a really weird bit next. In the audio commentary, Gran or Marks, there's no way of knowing which one's which. I imagine their own wives struggle to tell. They themselves say, that's a weird scene, probably could have done without it. Because at this point, remember, Ron doesn't actually know about the time portal. He's got his suspicions after he heard the radio phone in last week, but he doesn't know that. And he airs these suspicions with Yvonne.
He was enthusing the other week about some 1940s theme pub in the East End. Has he ever said anything to you?
No. Not in so many words.
What do you mean?
Well...
Ron, if you know something...
All right. Yvonne, would you say you had an open mind?
I'd like to think so.
Then have you ever conjectured as to whether the world as we perceive it is the be-all and end-all of physical existence?
Are we talking spiritually or scientifically?
I think I'm taking a position somewhere between those two alternatives.
So we're dealing in metaphysics?
Could be. Though I couldn't say for certain without getting hold of a dictionary.
Metaphysics is the science which investigates the first principles of nature and thought, which includes the abstract, the magical, and the transcendental.
That sounds like the turf we're playing on.
I don't believe we're having this conversation. OK, so what are you telling me? My husband's been spirited into the heavens in a fiery chariot?
Don't be daft. No, get away. I just think he may have stumbled through a hole in the space-time continuum and found himself in a parallel universe, but at a different point in history.
I think you should go home, Ron, and get some sleep. And tomorrow, some professional help.
It's a really weird conversation. It's about the fabric of space-time, and it's all completely abstract and flies in the face of what we're supposed to be seeing here, which is Yvonne being worried. It's an odd scene.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit, does it? But we didn't spend a lot of time in the 90s, which is good, because I prefer seeing 40 stuff. For a couple of reasons. I like the 40s bit better because Phoebe's there. Do Phoebe voice.
You can get to do Phoebe voice, yeah.
So that's good. I like seeing all the oldie-timey stuff. That's good. I don't appreciate seeing so much 90s oldie-timey stuff because it hurts. all of the way it looks.
Uh-huh.
The aesthetics of the 90s hurts. If you lived through the 90s, send in your pictures of you in the 90s, actually. I'd like to see some more 90s people. I need to document it. I want to see what their 90s were like. So if you're in your 30s, 40s, and were a bit older than me in the 90s, where maybe you were going out and you were wearing some of these worry suits and massive shirts and things. Send us in your pictures in the 90s and I'll look at them and I'll see if I can understand why you made these decisions.
Please do that. That will be amazing. We can have a little subsection of the Gary Lurie, which is specifically listeners in the 90s.
Yeah.
If you were alive in the 40s, send us some pictures of you in the 40s too.
Of course.
It's probably a bit hopeful, but we would very much like to see pictures of you in your 90s garb.
Our main listenership is going to be people who have some awful 90s pictures
to
show.
Oh, yeah. So. We're going to get some pictures of Bichelle-suited.
Because I was thinking earlier on, I feel quite bad because some people lived this.
You weren't thinking that about the Blitz.
No, not at all.
But you were thinking it about people who had to shop at Rumble's.
Saturday night, you had Noel's house party. You had to put up with that. Les Dennis. All of your interior designs being the same colour. So, yeah, send us in your 90s stuff and I'll judge it.
So don't worry about your eyes because we're back in the dank of the undergrounds. We're back to 1940. Now there is a bigger distraction, which is justifiable reason for not having a snog. Accordion playing, no reason to not snog. Pregnant woman in the bunk below you, reason to not have a snog.
Yeah, that would be really distracting.
Probably disrespectful.
Yeah. Just before we see that, there's a little bit where Gary is having some sort of split conversation with himself. And the Yvonne in his head.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that.
That's insanity, seeing someone do that.
He's preparing his excuses.
But you do that in your head. This is Gary's thing. He does it out loud. Everyone can hear him. Phoebe is there. And she, as far as she's concerned, Yvonne is his Australian boss.
Why is she Australian? There's no reason for her to be Australian.
Why is he Australian? But when he does an impression of her, she sounds like she's from up north. So, but yeah, he's going through all the different ways he can work out what could be the excuse. Again, not worried that at this point in time, Yvonne is worried for his safety. He's thinking, how can I make sure I'm covered? So he's going through all the different scenarios. Maybe his circuit breaker thing, he wasn't there, or the bus, or whatever. Systematically goes through them and realises what Yvonne would say to all of them, because he knows her brain, he's analysed her. He's probably got a spreadsheet. So he knows that these things work on her. But then he's interrupted by the pregnant lady.
It's a bit of a non-thing, this event. There was something a bit fillery about the episode in general. It's weaker than the two episodes we've covered so far. It's one of the weaker episodes in general in terms of things that happen.
Yeah.
Other than the nice bit of character development and the relationship between Gary and Phoebe, which it needs at this point to justify why he's carrying on doing it and why she might enter into this as well. That's useful from a plot point of view. The baby scene definitely feels like filler. It's not especially funny. The conversation between Yvonne and Ron feels very fillery and doesn't really make sense. There should have been a better secondary plot in this episode that would have stitched it all together a bit better. Just a suggestion. Too late to do anything about it now.
Happened a long time ago.
It's the next morning. Wandering back to the pub, there is bombing devastation. His premonition, well, not premonition, his reading in a book came true, and the East End was devastated by bombing in what was very nicely done. Because it clearly wasn't real. It was obviously a mock-up that was done on a green screen or whatever, but it was done really nicely. It was actually done better than the green screen work on the 2016 new episode, which was a bit ropey in places.
For the first time, you really see the effect of the bomb. More so, because the rest of it is all like shaky cam, oh blimey, what's it like?
That scene was allowed to take its time as well.
Yeah.
Partly because I'm sure they spent a lot of money on it and wanted to get their money's worth, but it definitely, you dwelled in it. There were some extras that were sort of picking through the rubble a bit. I thought that was really nicely done.
Yeah.
And it did make you think, you know what, this is a horrific thing that's happening here. The atmosphere underground as well was that people were genuinely scared and that this was hugely affecting people's lives. So that tone, I think they really got that right. So there was a lot of tonal and scene-setting things that the episode did well, but at the expense of enough plot and enough story to really move it forward. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
When they get back to the pub, though, our friendly ARP warden has called the Rozzers in because he got a bit suspicious that Gary Sparrow knew too much about what was happening with these air raids and that something was amiss. As such, there were a couple of detectives waiting for him and they felt his collar and they whisked him off to the police station for some interrogation to see how he knows all this stuff.
Gary, at this point, isn't taking it seriously.
He's not thought it through. This is the first institutional repercussions that he's been exposed to. He's
been arrested on suspicion of being a spy, which is a big deal.
As they say very clearly, this is a potential hanging offence. He's realised that he needs things like papers and a proper backstory and some sort of explanation that isn't just America. So we get the interrogation. He's still not taking it ever so seriously, but it does give us a chance to have our joke of the week.
Joke of the week.
Oh, yeah, America. How does that story go again? So you spent 3 years over there studying wireless, yeah? And when you returned, you were recruited to work in top secret radio research in liaison with the Yanks, who aren't even in the war?
Not officially.
And I'm Vera Lynn.
Well, then maybe we'll meet again.
It's a really stupid joke. It's not even really a joke. The audience clearly loved it. It was so stupid and inappropriate for the tone of where we were.
Yeah.
That it really stuck out. Yeah. I liked it. Challenged with the prospect of being locked up in the Tower of London and potentially shot, he needs to think fast to get himself out of this predicament.
His brain is doing that thing where all the zeros and ones are going in front of his eyes, where he's going through his data banks. Yeah. What can he use to get himself out of the situation? Luckily, he's been researching all the stuff that happened in the war, and he picked on a fact that you would only know if you are quite high up in the military. I can't remember what it was.
It was that there had been some secret US-English arming deal that had been struck that week that nobody knew about. The thing is, that wouldn't preclude you from being a spy. If anything, it might just suggest you're a really good one. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card, that one. It raises more questions than it answers.
Gary has the sort of liar that he is. Not only is he not fall that far ahead, he somehow manages to be all right in the end.
And that's what
and
happened.
And he's got him through.
And that's what happened, because we don't revisit that. It's just accepted that off he trots, and the next we see him, he's been released. And he's back in 1993.
The loving arms of Yvonne.
Ron's still there, dressed exactly as he was the night before, although Yvonne's now in her dressing gown, so he's obviously just been sat there, probably just drinking tinnies, I imagine. Yeah. Just all through the night, just sat there drinking tinnies.
Thinking up big words. Because at the same time, we haven't touched on this yet, there was also a bomb in 1993.
There was, for no real good reason again. There was a lot of redundant plot. When I first saw it, I thought what was going to happen is that there was going to be some kind of the past influencing the future. So maybe wherever they were got hit by a bomb, thought they were going to die, but then at the last minute it didn't go off. And they couldn't find it. And then the same bomb gets discovered in 1993. That's not what happened, though. There were two unrelated events. And the bomb in 1993, other than providing a little bit of peril and a little bit of fear for Yvonne that Gary might have been blown up, but didn't really have any purpose. Just like the pregnancy didn't really have any purpose. Just like the baby bit at the beginning didn't really have any purpose. Just like the conversation with Ron didn't really have any purpose. There's a lot more redundancy in this episode than we've seen in the episodes leading up to this point. Yvonne's very pleased to see him.
Big hug.
So he's been thinking about his excuse for why he's late. He's practiced it in the bomb shelter. What's he come up with? I was delivering a baby.
Didn't lie. Well, he did, because he didn't deliver the baby. He got the hot water. He saw a baby.
We don't even know it got that far. He was gone pretty sharpish the next morning.
He was around a pregnant woman.
Which, as excuses go.
Yeah, it's not the best one.
End episode. Out we get. There we are. Join us again next week when we'll be looking at episode 4 of season 1 of Goodnight, Sweetheart. Bye.
Bye.
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wikishuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNSCast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.